America stands at a profound crossroads in its centuries-long struggle with race. Coleman Hughes's The End of Race Politics offers a provocative thesis. What if our obsession with race is making racism worse, not better? This young philosopher challenges prevailing narratives about racism while offering a path forward rooted in principles that once united the civil rights movement. As racial tensions dominate headlines and shape policy, Hughes invites us to reconsider our fundamental assumptions about race, racism, and the path toward genuine equality. Race is one of the most discussed yet least understood concepts in American life. Unlike natural concepts like tree, race is a social concept inspired by natural phenomena, similar to how months are inspired by lunar cycles without precisely tracking them. The natural basis comes from human evolution, when populations migrated from Africa and remained isolated in different environments, their gene pools evolved differently. However, our social concept of race has become detached from this natural foundation, creating arbitrary categories. The diversity within racial groups illustrates this. Top-earning Asians make 10.7 times more than lowest-earning Asians, a wider gap than in any other racial group. While 72% of Indian Americans have bachelor's degrees, only 9% of Bhutanese Americans do. America was founded on a contradiction, preaching freedom while denying it to millions of African descent. Yet another contradiction exists. The colorblind principle central to fighting slavery and Jim Crow was abandoned at its moment of greatest victory. Contrary to claims that colorblindness was invented by white racists, it was championed by radical anti-racist activists, particularly Wendell Phillips, abolition's golden trumpet. As head of America's leading abolitionist organization, Phillips proposed a constitutional amendment prohibiting all race-based state action, creating a government colorblind. When segregation was challenged in Plessy v. Ferguson, 1896, Justice John Marshall Harlan wrote that our Constitution is colorblind and neither knows nor tolerates classes among citizens. I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. These words from Martin Luther King Jr. capture the essence of colorblindness. Not literally not seeing race, but treating people without regard to race in both public policy and private life. This vision has deep American roots, championed by historical anti-racists like Frederick Douglass, Henry Highland Garnett, and Bayard Rustin. Colorblindness doesn't mean pretending not to notice race. We all see race and can't help it. Rather, it's an ethical principle. We should treat people without regard to race in our policies and personal interactions. This principle contrasts with today's anti-racist movement, which has become what Hughes calls neo-racism. This ideology defines itself in opposition to colorblindness and embraces racial stereotyping in the name of social justice. Robin DiAngelo exemplifies this with statements about being less white, which characterize whiteness as encompassing arrogance, ignorance about race, and lack of compassion toward non-white people's struggles. What makes neo-racism insidious is that it invokes civil rights leaders while betraying their deepest convictions. While claiming race is a social construct, neo-racists contradict this belief by strictly policing racial categories and enforcing rigid rules about how different races should interact. Colorblindness has come under intense attack. When author Amelie Wenzhou described oppression as blind to skin color in her novel Blood Hair, drawing from her knowledge of human trafficking in Asia, she faced such severe backlash that she canceled her book's publication. Bernie Sanders was mocked for suggesting voters choose candidates based on abilities rather than skin color, despite this view aligning perfectly with Dr. King's own statements. While white supremacists and neo-racists disagree on which races are superior, they share a common racist anatomy. Both categorize people primarily by race and attribute moral qualities to racial groups. Evidence of this appears in mainstream outlets like The Cut, which published a video asking, "What are white people superior at?" with answers including violence, genocide, and lack of empathy. Neo-racist ideology has infiltrated America's elite institutions, from universities and mainstream media to government. These institutions apply clear double standards based on race, as exemplified by the New York Times defense of Sarah Jiang's anti-white tweets, statements that would have been career-ending had they targeted any other racial group. Government at all levels has implemented explicitly race-based policies. The American Rescue Plan included $4 billion in aid exclusively for non-white farmers with debt, leaving white farmers with identical financial struggles ineligible. During the COVID-19 pandemic, CDC officials initially recommended prioritizing essential workers over the elderly for vaccines, primarily because the elderly population wasn't racially diverse enough. Higher education has become particularly hospitable to neo-racist ideology. Yale University invited psychiatrist Aruna Kilanani to deliver a lecture where she described fantasies about murdering white people. Another troubling trend is the reintroduction of racial segregation on college campuses, with many institutions offering segregated dorms, orientation programs, and graduation ceremonies, directly contradicting the integration goals of the civil rights movement. To combat neo-racism, we must establish consistent standards in how society responds to all forms of racial prejudice. Currently, racial slurs against some groups face immediate consequences, while similar expressions targeting others receive less scrutiny. This inconsistency creates resentment and undermines equal treatment. Blind evaluation processes have emerged as powerful tools for reducing discrimination. Studies of anonymous grading systems in universities show significant reductions in grading disparities across racial groups. In labor markets, blind resume screening has increased interview rates for minorities by 25 to 40%. Rather than perpetuating systems that create an illusion of equality, institutions could redirect their resources toward addressing root causes of educational disparities. Research by economist Roland Fryer identified 5 critical factors that correlate with academic success, including frequent teacher feedback, data-driven instruction, intensive tutoring, extended learning time, and high expectations for all students. We stand at a crossroads in American race relations. One path leads to endless conflict, where racial groups eternally swap roles as oppressor and oppressed. The alternative follows the true principles of the civil rights movement: belief in our common humanity and colorblindness in both policy and private life. True anti-racists reject racial discrimination and stereotyping in all forms. Unlike neo-racists who co-opt the anti-racist label while contradicting its principles, genuine anti-racists remain committed to the explicit principles of civil rights leaders like Martin Luther King Jr. The colorblind principle offers the only sustainable path forward in a multiracial democracy. By treating each person as an individual rather than a representative of their race, we honor the legacy of those who fought against slavery and segregation. We create the conditions for genuine social harmony, not through forced diversity initiatives or racial quotas, but through the natural human connections that form when we see each other simply as fellow human beings, each with our own unique story.